Chapter 23. "Come on," says Bob. He's wearing his blue North Face ski jacket, ski pants, his reflective sunglasses hanging from a black cord around his neck, and his very best cheery optimism. He's holding my new skis. K2 Burnin' Loves. They're sleek and shiny, sporting a rusty orange swirl design on never-used white, my big Christmas gift from Bob. They're gorgeous, and normally I'd feel giddy at the sight of brand new skis, imagining how great they'll respond, anxious to get onto the slopes as early in the morning as possible. But all I feel is pressure. "I'm not ready," I say. It's 3 days after Christmas, and we're in Vermont. Linus is napping, and Charlie and Lucy are in the mudroom getting dressed for a day of ski lessons. I'm sitting at our dining table, still in my pajamas, with last Sunday's New York Times spread out in front of me. Bob's here through the weekend, and my mother, the kids, and I are staying for the week of school vacation. Bob's not too keen about leaving me up here for a whole week without him, and in a house that hasn't been professionally Sarah-proofed, but I convinced him that a week in Vermont would be good for me. A week in Vermont is always good for me. "This was your idea," says Bob. "I never said I wanted to ski," I say. "Then why are we up here if you don't want to ski?" he asks. "I like it here." "Come on, I think you should give it a try," says Bob. "How am I going to ski? I can't even walk." "Maybe it'll be easier than walking." "How would that be possible?" "I don't know. Maybe the thing that reconnects you to the left isn't picking balls up off a tray. Maybe it's getting back to doing the things you love to do."
"Maybe."
Maybe skiing would awaken that dormant part of my brain that doesn't seem to be jazzed one bit about picking up red balls. Maybe I could simply point myself down Mount Cortland in my new K2s, and my left and right appendages would naturally work in concert, carrying me safely to the bottom. Or maybe, and more likely, I'd fall and break my leg, or tear the ligaments in my knee, or I'd veer off the trail and crash into a tree. My red ball therapy may not be my recovery's magic bullet, but at least it doesn't carry the risk that I could end up in a wheelchair and even more dependent on my mother than I am now. "What's the worst that can happen?" asks Bob. "Two broken legs, another brain injury, death?" Bob should know better than to ask me, of all people, an extreme question loaded with doom. I tilt my head and raise my eyebrows. Bob sees that he's chosen the wrong tactic. "The only way to know if you can ride the horse again is to get back in the saddle," says Bob. "A lame cowboy cliche." I shake my head and sigh. "Come on, give it a try. We can take it nice and slow. We'll stay on the bunny slope with the kids. I'll hold on to you and be with you the whole time." "Bob, she's not ready to ski. She could break a leg," says my mother. She's standing behind me in the kitchen, cleaning up the dishes from breakfast. She made buttermilk pancakes and sausage. It feels strange to have my mother here, making breakfast for my family. And it also feels strange to hear her come to my defense, to be of the same opinion. But I have to admit, her pancakes are delicious, and her voiced concern gives me the best possible excuse to stay home in my pajamas. "Sorry, my mother says I can't go." "You're not going to break anything, I promise. I'll stay with you," says Bob. "It's too soon. You're pushing me," I say. "You need a little push here. Come on, I think it'll be good for you." Skiing would be good for me. But even if I subtract out the possibility of death or serious injury, I still can only envision myself in a constant tangled knot of legs and skis, my skis popping off with each embarrassing fall, the impossibility of balancing on my left foot on a slippery hill while trying to fit my right boot back into the binding, and the equally impossible thought of balancing on my right foot while trying to coax a less than responsive left foot, toe first, into the binding of my left ski. Not one second of this sounds fun to me, and it can hardly be called skiing. "I don't want to." "You know, you're the one who said you wanted to ski this year," says Bob. "This season," I say, correcting him. "I do, I will, but not today." He stares at me with his hands on his hips, thinking. "Okay, but you can't stay squirreled inside forever," he says, and looks over at my mother for a pointed second. "You have to get back to all the things you used to do, your job, skiing, We're getting you on that mountain this season, Sarah. Okay, I say, knowing he means well but feeling a bit more threatened than inspired. Bob leans my new skis against the kitchen table across from where I'm sitting, probably so that I can see them and think about what I'm missing, the consequences of my decision. I kiss Bob and the kids goodbye, wish them a fun and safe day, and listen to them swish in their nylon shell pants and clomp in their heavy boots out the door. After I hear the car pull out of the driveway, I sigh and prepare to settle into a nice, quiet morning of reading. I look for where I left off in the paper. I read a couple of words and look across the table at my shiny new skis. Quit staring at me. We're not going today. I read a couple of words. My mother is clanging dishes and pans in the sink. I can't concentrate. I need a coffee. I bought Bob a new coffee maker for Christmas, the Impressa S9 One Touch, the best of the very best, top-of-the-line cappuccino, cafe mocha latte, latte macchiato machine. It's insanely expensive, so it wasn't a smart purchase given our current financial situation, but I couldn't resist it. With the touch of a single button on its polished stainless steel panel, it grinds beans, froths milk, and brews coffee to the precise temperature, volume, and strength desired. It cleans itself automatically, boasts being the quietest coffee maker available today, and looks oh so pretty sitting on our kitchen countertop. It's like the perfect child, well-groomed and educated, it does exactly what we want, does its chores without even being asked, and brings us nothing but joy. Bob and I both drank ourselves silly yesterday. I must have peed at least a dozen times, including the three times that necessitated pit stops on the way up to Cortland. Bob was ready to diaper me. And I lay in bed wide-eyed, caffeine still grooving in my veins, unable to put the brakes on my buzzing thoughts for hours after I should have been sound asleep. But it was worth it. Since both of us couldn't bear to spend the weekend apart from our new baby, we brought the Impressa up to Vermont with us. But unfortunately, we somehow forgot to bring any coffee beans, and the closest grocery store up here that sells coffee worthy of touching the Impressa is in St. Johnsbury, which is about 20 miles to the south. As much as I crave another perfect latte macchiato and to breathe in that rich and comforting aroma throughout the house, the quickest way this morning to a cup of coffee and relief from that caffeine withdrawal headache twisting its screws into my temples is to go to B&C's Cafe. Mom, I call over my right shoulder into the kitchen behind me where she's washing the dishes. Will you go to B&C's and get me a large non-fat latte? She followed us up last night in her Volkswagen so we'd have a car to get around in while Bob is gone for the week. Is that in the village? Yes. Everything is in the village. There's only one traffic light in Cortland, and the handful of country roads all lead either to the town village, to the mountain, or to the highway. And the village itself is nothing more than a short section of Main Street, dotted with mostly quaint mom-and-pop shops, selling quilts, cheddar cheese, fudge, and maple syrup. The village also has a sporting goods store, the only gas station, a church, a library, the town hall, a couple of restaurants, an art gallery, and B&C's. My mother has been here for less than 24 hours, and she already seems comfortable with the lay of the land, even without Bob's GPS. A 5-year-old could figure it out. Heck, even a 37-year-old with left neglect could probably navigate without incident to the village and back. You'll be okay here without me? She asks. I'll be fine. It's just a few minutes. She's not convinced. I'm reading the paper. Linus is asleep. I'll be fine. Okay, she says. I'll be right back. I hear the door close behind her and then her car pulling out of the driveway. I smile knowing that I'll have a steaming hot cup of coffee in a few minutes. And in those same few minutes, Charlie and Lucy will probably start their full-day lesson, and Bob will be riding the quad lift to the summit. I'm surprised I don't feel left out or the slightest twinge of jealousy. The view from the top of Mount Cortland of the snow-frosted treetops, the majestic green mountains, the glacial lakes, and the rolling valley below is breathtaking. Bathed in soft early morning light, the whole world from the summit feels quiet and peaceful and still. Glorious. I'll get there. I will. In the meantime, with Linus asleep and everyone else gone, it's quiet and peaceful and still here. I gaze out through the sliding glass doors overlooking the yard. 3 acres of sprawling meadow abutting wooded conservation land. A zigzag of animal tracks, probably deer, break up the otherwise untouched, smooth blanket of snow. There is no picket fence to keep the wildlife out, or to cage our kids in, or to obstruct the panoramic view. The nearest neighbor's house can only be seen from the front, and only once the leaves have fallen off all the maple trees. Life here is private, tranquil, expansive, glorious.